Welcome to the Commercial Matters Podcast. Your show host is Amit Kapoor, owner of Mindful Contract Solutions. Nothing in this podcast is intended to be legal advice.
Hi folks, welcome to another episode of the Commercial Matters Podcast. Now, I haven't done this for a while, and this specific episode has got nothing to do with the Commercial Matters theme. In this episode, I wanted to talk about an experience that I have been through in the last week. Well, actually, an experience of several months culminating in an exam that I did in the last 2 weeks, which was the SQE2 exam. I know quite a few of you have followed my posts on LinkedIn. I've also read an article that Legal Cheek published about my SQE1 performance, and you might want to know how I have got on with SQE2. I am conscious that I have far less credibility this time around to talk about the SQE2 exam because we haven't had a result yet. So I have no way of knowing whether I've done good enough or not. But I am conscious that there is an exam due in April 2024. And whilst these thoughts are fresh, I thought this is the best time to record my views on the exam. Now, I know there's a lot of information out there about how you prepare for the exams, and it's very likely you are already with a prep provider, in which case they would have a philosophy of their own that you're going to be following for the exam preparation. So I'm only going to touch upon what I felt was a little unusual and things that you may not necessarily expect when you get there. So there are 5 bits that I want to talk about. The first is the difference between my experience giving the SQE1 exam in an exam center compared to my experience giving the SQE2 exam. Now, I personally did not find the SQE1 experience very different from how it was at the time I prepared for SQE1 in my own home. And by that I mean that when I prepared for SQE1 in my own home, I was effectively largely spending time thinking and trying to narrow down options. And in the SQE1 setting, in the exam setting, I felt I could pretty much do that. Obviously, the interface was different, but the amount of engagement that was required of me with the interface was not significant enough. So essentially, this meant I could adopt the same practices I was adopting in the time of my practice when it came to the actual exam. So in simple terms, I'm trying to say that the interface made less of an impact in the SQE1 exam. By contrast, in the SQE2 exam, the interface is extremely different from the word processors you would be using at home for doing your mock tests, mock assignments. So effectively, when you're doing your mock preparations at home, you are not focusing at all on the interface aspects of the assignment. You're just getting on with it. You are consciously dedicating your time to thinking on the responses and strategizing your answers. But in the real thing, the SQE2 exam, the interface does have a bearing on your thought process in that you're conscious that you're doing it on a different interface. It's taking a share of your mind. So essentially, the level of focus that you can get on the assignment in the real exam is bound to be somewhat lesser than you might in your home setting. So all in all, it means that the SQE2 exam, very unlike the SQE1 exam, is not going to bring the best out of you. I also saw myself, for example, changing my approach a little bit. I mean, previously for any question around case matter analysis, I used to take at least 10 to 12 minutes out just to understand the question in full before starting to do any kind of drafting. But the environment in SQE2 exams made me feel the urge to get started with drafting something before I had spent enough time analyzing the matters themselves. Again, I'm not saying if it's good or bad. I'm saying it was a little different to how I did things when I was practicing SQE2 assignments at home. In my case, I think all of this difference of interface probably led to me coming out of a few exams, then remembering that there was a point of law that I got wrong or a point of law that I did not cover, or that I could do it differently if I had another chance. Now, the silver lining is all of you are going to be experiencing the same, which means it is a level playing field. So if you want to take away anything from this point, it's that it's entirely normal to feel that you haven't been able to do at your best in the exam. It is unlike SQE1. In the SQE1 exam, I thought my best performance came in the exam. In SQE2, I'm not so sure that it did. So in essence, that was my point one. So quickly moving on to point two, that would be around the interviewing assignments. Obviously, you will be aware that the SRA uses actors for the purposes of interview. Now, I don't know about the prep course you might be on, but in the prep course I was on, we had professional lawyers pretend to be the client. Now, in my view, that meant that the responses that I got in the course were a lot more sophisticated than I was able to drive out of the actors who were, you know, non-lawyers effectively. So that's just something to be aware of. And also, it's important to bear in mind that the objectives of a tutor pretending to be an actor are bound to be a little different to the objective of a lay client. So it's just important to bear that in mind when you're going into the client interviewing assignments. And if you are able to get some practice with some genuine non-legal clients before you give the exam, I think that should be very helpful. I think the third thing to focus on is spending time on trying to understand what level of competence would afford you a mark of clearly satisfactory. And the answer to that is in the SRA assessment specification pages, which talks about the SRA, the solicitor competency level, to be at level 3. I think it's quite important to go and actually read that level of competency. And hopefully it will give you some comfort in that you don't have to be absolutely perfect to be getting a grade of clearly satisfactory, because there is some level of imprecision that is expected of a newly qualified solicitor, especially in the circumstances that you can't look up the law. But in hindsight, I think aside from reading what level 3 looks and sounds like, it will be useful to look at level 4, which is the more advanced level. And the reason I say that is, as you will know, the assessing solicitors are able to award you a superior performance. Now, it's quite important to know what does superior performance mean. As described in the marking criteria, it means that you have well exceeded the requirements of the competency. But what does well exceeding the competency mean? What would qualify as something that well exceeds the competency? And my takeaway from reading the threshold level 4 was that operating at this level, an NQ solicitor effectively takes ownership of the issue. So you're not just slavishly responding to the email, but you're actually going a little beyond that and suggesting what measures would allow your partner to take a completely hands-off approach and rely and be assured with your advice. Now, again, I have no way of knowing today whether that's good advice or not, because I haven't had my scores. But that is something I attempted. It was somewhat different, and I will let you know if it pays off. I think the fourth thing that I wanted to focus on was the approach you should be adopting for the functioning legal knowledge required for undertaking the assessments. Now, very helpfully, SRA have set out one-line descriptions in their SRA assessment specification pages around the content of the functional legal knowledge that you're being tested on. It actually fully corroborates with everything they have written for SQE1, just that any topics around solicitors' accounts and constitutional law, and I think to some extent legal system, is simply not considered to be within the content of SQE2. So the tip here is that towards the final stage of the preparation, it's actually quite helpful to work backwards from that list of topics and see if you can talk about, or you firstly, if you understand every line within that FLK section, and if you are able to at least weave a line or two around that particular point. Because if you're able to do that, chances are that there will be nothing in the exam that you can't comprehend or you can't associate with a point of law. I'm personally not a very big fan of flashcards just because I've never really grown up using them, and when I tried to do it, I couldn't quite see the benefits. But in hindsight, I think flashcards are a very, very useful tool to make sure that you have the recall in terms of each line in that FLK section. So that was point number four. And I think the fifth thing I want to address is managing yourself over the exam days. I think the advice from anyone who's actually been through the exam is going to be try and not exhaust yourself after each exam day, especially in the writtens, because you have three back-to-back days, all half days. So effectively, you do have time off towards the end of the day. But the conventional wisdom suggests that you shouldn't cram that particular time. In hindsight, I agree with that. I mean, I did not quite follow that advice. So I did resort to studying for the next day, because that's the same approach I'd taken for SQE1. The SQE1 exam, after the end of my SQE1 paper 1, I came back home and I spent the remaining few hours of the day starting to look at FLK2. And I thought it's something that would be okay with me, because I have been able to cope with it in the past. However, I hadn't quite imagined that there was a slight difference in the format for SQE1, in that you had a gap of 3-4 days, and I think now you have even more between the two exam days. In SQE2, you don't. You are doing exams back to back, and you are required to bring your whole self the next morning. And I think I crammed in too much. So much that on the last day, I think I was on an ibuprofen at the time of giving the exam. I don't think that's ideal to be on medication whilst you're giving an exam, but that's where I found myself. So if you read any of the SQE posts from people who have given the exam talking and complaining about a brain ache, that is real. That is what they literally mean. It's not an exaggeration. It does happen to me. So perhaps a sensible strategy for using your time between each of the exam days, or especially on the writtens, is to have a plan in mind. You know, it might well be just that you look at the flashcards and nothing else, or it might be that you just look at some areas of law that you haven't been able to retain and you need to be practicing just before the exam day. But don't overdo it, is my suggestion, because you do need to be very fresh the next morning. I think that was everything I wanted to say in terms of my experience. I mean, just by way of recap, I think the first point I made was about the fact that your experience on the exam day in SQE2 is bound to be somewhat different to your experience in SQE1. And that's primarily because you engage with the interface a lot more in SQE2. And that takes a bit of your conscious mind and conscious thinking. So just something to be aware of. The second point was around the experience in client interviewing being somewhat different to what it might have been with your tutors pretending to be actors when you were doing your prep course, because that's not the real thing. I mean, you are getting very switched on and sophisticated clients, even when they are, you know, consciously trying to not be so. I think the third thing was, aside from reading what the threshold level 3 of a newly qualified solicitor's competency is, also look at what level 4 is, so that you know that when you want to exceed the expectations, what is really expected of you, and you just hope that the marker then sees that you've well exceeded the expectations and you're almost near the next level of the competency. My fourth point was about trying to develop an approach for making sure that there was something you knew about each line of the functioning legal knowledge section of the SQE2 assessment specification. If you get there, I think there will be nothing in the exam that will surprise you or catch you unaware, because you would have the recall and have something to say about anything that you're questioned on. And my final suggestion was that in the gap between each of the exam days, especially in the written exams, make sure that you are leaving enough rest time, you're not cramming too much, and you've actually planned what is it that you want to do between those 2 days, and ideally not exceed more than a couple to 3 hours at the max. So that's it from me, folks. If you are giving the SQE2 exams in April this year, or if you manage to get a hold of this podcast for a future exam, my best wishes to you. Good luck. The exam is tough, but remember, it's a level playing field. The problems that you face, it's very likely that everyone else is also facing. So, and also remember the power of statistics. 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 people usually pass the exam. So always try and work the other way around. If there is one individual out of 5 who shouldn't pass, do you really genuinely think that should be you? And if the answer is no, then you should believe in yourself, regardless of how your performance on the day goes. So I just say, have confidence and you will do well. Thank you all. Bye.
That's this week's episode of the Commercial Matters podcast. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. Thank you for listening.